Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers. Each week, I invite a different guest from a different walk of life to talk to me about books that they've read, which have influenced them, and books they suggest we take to the beach this summer. You've no excuse not to be well read. Welcome to the very last edition of Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers, and Chris Gruppetta from Merlin Publishers, who joins us again. He's going to give us a bit of a prescription of books that we can be reading this summer and hopefully beyond. So,
hi,
welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
And no,
prescription
thank you.
Sounds a bit, you know, medical.
Book.
Yeah, exactly. Book doctor.
I just think it's like, you know, sometimes you need a bit of help. You know what sort of books you like. And, you know, these authors, they just don't write fast enough.
Yes, exactly. Come on, what do I read until the next one's out?
You know,
No, I was going to say, you know, there's this thing of bibliotherapy.
Which
is in abroad, there's this independent bookshop in Bath that kind of started it off, and there are others do it. And you literally book a session with the book doctor, exactly, who kind of gives you bibliotherapy and, you know, recommends books. You have a chat with him or her of what your tastes are, what you'd like to, what's in the mood, and, you know, he or she will recommend.
Because they're doing this on the clothes shopping sites now.
Yeah,
you bought this before, you might like this.
Exactly. So, you know, it's the kind of thing. So
anyway, I like that idea.
There's an idea.
Can we do that in Malta?
Yeah, we should try it. You know.
It's really tough. Buying books is one of those things I do. And like I said in the first series, you know, the 3 for 4s and the 2 for 4s.
Yes. Exactly.
I do that, but sometimes you end up with a duff one.
Yes, exactly. And it's always, So,
to try and find two or three at a time. Do a bibliotherapy, you call it?
Bibliotherapy,
yeah. Maybe we'll do a whole thing on that.
Exactly. Well, it's a bit what we're doing here.
Yeah.
So let's bibliotherapize.
Yes.
Is that even a word? I don't know. We just made it one.
Okay. So, doctor.
Anyway, so
please
patient.
Please prescribe me a book for this long, hot summer that's coming up.
Yeah, well, a book that, well, now we put it that way, the pressure's on. But because, you know, as we were mentioning, you know, if recommending a book can also be tricky. But there's this book, it's many of your listeners might have heard about it because it's made quite a bit of noise. It's called The Power by Naomi Alderman, if I'm remembering the surname correctly. It's kind of been billed as a kind of feminist book. It's about, it starts off in the contemporary world where women at the age of puberty, roughly, start getting the power to give electric shocks.
Fantastic.
Yes, it starts off in that kind of, you know, it starts off with this kind of, first there's one case and this girl is, you know, obviously considered weird and contained, and it starts spreading. And obviously it's this kind of feminist take on, because bit by bit there's a kind of this female takeover of the world.
Very and fantastic.
So yes, no, it's a very much being built as a kind of, but it also shows how kind of, it's a kind of real feminist, not utopia feminist book, in the sense that ultimately, without again wanting to give too much away and, you know, spoil the whole book, when there is this woman, female takeover of the world, you realize that, you know, there's still up to the same kind of, you know, corruption and greed. So it's kind of, that's why I said it's not a utopia feminist book. It's a kind of, you know, okay, they take over, the tables are turned, so there's that kind of tables are turned, so kind of the men are physically the weaker sex, because obviously they can't retaliate against, you know, and it can be, it is used to kill, so they have whole armies. So, but it's kind of, you know, the resulting world isn't kind of utopia, it's more of a dystopia. And then it ends up in a kind of, it's a pretty dark book. It's been praised and won loads of prizes already, and I understand it's probably set to win even more, because it's an original take on how to tackle, you know, I mean, kind of Handmaid's Tale for anyone who's liked, who enjoys The Handmaid's Tale, Margaret Atwood, classic, that kind of book. So kind of
opposite to that.
Yeah, it's a kind of, you know, take on the feminist take, but in this case, there's also, you know, a lot of, It's dark in many ways.
I think wherever there are humans involved, actually,
yes,
it's
exactly.
Going to be,
and I think that's actually
that's
probably
the point, yeah.
That's the point. So kind of, you know, you know, if it's corruption, it only takes one person who manages to find their way at the top of a government of mm-hmm. a country, to you know, so whether he's male or she's female, that's kind of mm-hmm. the take of the book. So that was I found it to be an interesting,
the power.
Sobering, the power. Yeah,
okay.
That's one book. Another book that's think is. It will be, you know, around summer, is just out in probably paperback. It's called The Immortalists.
Mm-hmm.
It's been hyped a lot by, you know, some books get hyped a lot by the publishers, and you never know if it's going to live up to the hype. But I had read an advance copy before it was out, and kind of said, so it was, you know, there was no cover to it, literally no cover, just a black some paper holding it together. So there was nothing kind of to sell it by. But it was interesting. It's about these four siblings, they're living in the States, and they go to one of these kind of women who kind of tell you that they can tell the future, and, you know, look in the crystal ball, this kind of thing, and they're all kind of, oh, it's a bit of fun, let's do it.
Uh-huh.
And she sees each of them separately, and she tells them, and they're making fun of her, so she tells them the day, the exact day they're going to die on. And she calls each of them separately, so each of them here is only his or her date.
Okay.
And obviously they're out of there. Okay, yeah, this is rubbish. She's, you know, one of these frauds, like, you know, all these kind of frauds saying, I can read the future, I can do this. But then in all four of them, in different ways, there's kind of, but what if?
Mm.
And then the book is split into four parts. Each part follows a different sibling. And again, I don't want to give too much away of the book, but even you as the reader are left kind of guessing and wondering, okay, was she right or was she not? And there's this issue about, is our life predetermined, or do we, by thinking that we're going to die on that date, in a way almost make it happen, in a way,
mm-hmm.
Kind of knowing that, you know, if I've been told that I'm going to, you know, the author does it, you know, pretty
Your
interestingly.
Mind play on
yeah, the thing. Kind of mind playing. By the end of it, you're like, okay, am I reading a book about something, did something magical, or, you know, really happened? Did she really have this gift, or was she just a fraudster who, you know, played on their confidence and played on them? And, you know, the author does a good job. It's
again,
it's a good plot, and it's, you know, the thing is, you know how there was this book a while ago, an academic book about how there are only 7 basic plots in the world, and if, you know, had to boil down all the stories in the world, you'd get it down to 7 plots. So when you've read quite a bit, as we both do, and many listeners out there do, you kind of get to the point that you want to read something different and say, okay, this is yet another boy meets girl, this is, you know. So when you find something that's got a bit of a different take to it, that tends to intrigue
me.
Then, and I tend to read it, and then sometimes it might disappoint a bit, sometimes not.
Did you think, like, reading the four in a row like that as well, you should just keep going with it?
Yes, no, it's that kind of thing, because obviously it's the author does this thing where she kind of then links one to the other, and something that was vague, or kind of one sibling just called the other on the phone in one section, the next section you see it from the other point of view, and say, oh, so when she rang him and he kind of got rid of her, it's because this and this was going on in his life at the time, and we didn't know that. So it's interesting, you know, even from a plot point of view.
Interesting way to lay it out, in fact, as well.
Exactly. She does something interesting. It's called The Immortalists.
The Immortalists. Okay. That's another good one, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's found interesting. Another book I enjoyed, which has just come out, and it's just coming out right now in paperback, so it should be perfect, as I said, for
Sandy Beach.
Summer Reach. Exactly. It's called Greatest Hits.
Okay.
And it actually is the story of this female folk singer, who is fiction, obviously, work of fiction, but in the story, she's pretty famous, and she's retired, but she's decided with her agent, manager, to kind of bring out one kind of greatest hits album, encompassing, you know, well, obviously her greatest hits across the years.
Tour.
Exactly, that kind of thing. So she's selecting her preferred hits, and each chapter is linked to one of her songs. And obviously, in each chapter, she remembers, because she's a singer-songwriter, so she remembers why she wrote. And it's a device whereby, you know, basically, it's the story of her life.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she starts off as this kind of, you know, college girl, working as a waitress to make ends meet, and, you know, slowly you can see her.
So it's going to burst into that Human League song, then.
Yeah.
Working as a waitress.
Exactly. So, you know, it would be appropriate in this case. And actually, one other, you mentioning music, funnily enough, one special thing I found about this book is that it actually comes with a soundtrack.
Oh.
So the author and the publisher commissioned a real singer to write, so there is an album available on Spotify.
Okay.
It's actually called Greatest Hits with the same book cover. Uh-huh. And it says this is by, I don't remember the singer, uh-huh. sorry, apologies to the singer name, but it says it's kind of linked to the book Greatest Hits by Laura Barnett.
Uh-huh.
And so you can even, if you want to, you can even on Spotify listen to the music while
reading. That's a great gift for a couple of people I know.
It is. And in fact, I listened to it, as I do to many books I read, as an audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
And the audiobook does this great thing of actually having, not the entire, but part of each song at the opening of each chapter.
Okay.
So it's really unusual. So you're reading and, you know, you're driving and not reading, listening, and you suddenly hear this song, you hear, then it fades out, and you start the chapter. So, and it's a brilliant way. And I did find myself for kind of a month or so listening to the actual album on Spotify after I finished
the
book.
Do you have to buy the Spotify album as well? Or Spotify
free? No, Spotify is free. Spotify is free.
Sorry, I'm a bit of a dinosaur.
Spotify is free. It's if you get the free version, it's with adverts and that kind of thing. But yeah, you can get it for free.
Okay, so not, I was wondering if the publisher was being very clever.
No.
Get two sets of sales out of one.
It could be, because obviously I assume it's available, you know, to buy as well, but obviously many of us listen to music on Spotify.
I've got a you've just given me the idea for the return book.
Okay, so
the return book would be, you know how a song affects you and you were a part time in your life.
Yes.
So she's written about why she wrote the song, and then writes about where they were in their life and how that song comes into it.
See, that would be brilliant. It's a brilliant sequel.
There you go.
We should pitch it to the publisher.
Let's do that.
So, yeah, sorry. Glad to be giving. No.
Ideas.
We might have, you know, got us a sequel there.
Yeah.
So, this was another great book.
That sounds
so
really,
really
good, actually.
Greatest Hits.
Greatest
and the author is Laura Barnett.
Uh-huh.
Actually, Laura Barnett's first book, and it could be an idea for a beat sheet for Anheuser Credit. It wasn't that famous because it was her debut. It's called Versions of Us. And it was, again, about this couple who meet at university, but it's kind of sliding doors situation, but with three. So there's kind of three, you know, there's a small change in which it kind of takes their lives in three different paths. And what she does differently here, a bit confusingly, is that she alternates the chapters. So it's 3.1, 3.2, 3.3, then chapter 4.1, 4.2, and so it gets a bit confusing. In fact, I have a friend to whom I recommend the book who read it and cheated, kind of, and read the ones first, then the twos, and that's an easier way of reading it, and why not?
It worked for them.
It worked. But it's kind of, that was her first book, and she was exploring this, and this other book, Greatest Hits, she explored the kind of timeline.
I think it might be easier, you know, to write in that way, because you've, contained it.
In one at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
So
definitely.
You can really focus, get all your detail and not lose the reader.
And mind you, it does get a bit confusing, because what she does is that although they take separate paths, so in one story they're together, and the other one they broke up when they're finishing university and have separate lives, but then she keeps bringing the same characters in. So someone that's in version one she met at university and they hooked up with, in version two she didn't meet, but then 15 years later, you know, was at a Starbucks and just bumped into him and started up a relationship there. So it gets confusing. Okay, is this the one when she's with him just now, or when she's been with him for 15 years and they have three kids?
Just call them, you know, blue, red, orange, yellow, purple.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been easier.
This poor author, we're giving her all these things.
Yeah, exactly. We seem to have picked on this author.
Bless her, no. I'm looking forward to reading The Greatest Hits for sure.
Greatest Hits, the music aspect I really enjoyed.
Okay.
Maybe a couple of Maltese suggestions.
Yes, please. Yes, I don't read Maltese, but you have to break down the story.
I read mostly for work, but there's been a couple of interesting, one on the, definitely on the beach read line. It's actually a translation from Italian.
Okay.
It's a non-fiction, it's a real life book, but it reads like fiction. And this movie director, real life movie director in Italy, the book in Italian was called Ho sposato una vegana.
Okay.
I married a vegan.
Vegan? Okay.
And in fact, the Maltese version is Is There Witch the Vegana?
Okay.
And it's this Italian guy, you know, playboy, single, enjoys his life with his mates, and really, you know, enjoys his meat and his pasta and, you know, his, you know, Italian food, and he falls for this really, really hot model and actress, mm-hmm. and he admits, you know, it was initially the looks thing, uh-huh. and she's really, really hot, but obviously she's a strict vegan, mm-hmm. and it's about their life together. I mean, he doesn't initially know she's a vegan, and for
how is that possible? They tell you within 2 seconds.
Yeah, that's his joke. But the thing is that in this story, at least that's how he relates it, he wanted to impress her, so he took her out in Rome to a steakhouse, to one of these very expensive steakhouses. Think he's impressing her, and obviously she's a vegan. And then she's also a very bossy vegan, so once they move in together, she makes him get rid of all the Nutella jars, all the pasta. This guy's in it is Italian, uh-huh. so, and you know, she's really, you know, so
can anybody be that pretty?
That's the quick question. That's the big question. Mind you, he actually says it in the book. He says, if you're wondering if I'm mad or if I'm just being drugged to stay with her, I have just one word. He gives us her name and surname. He says, just go Google her, look at her, and then see if I'm right. And
yeah, but to give up Nutella.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, steak I could probably give up, but Nutella, forget it.
I wouldn't, but he did appear. But it's hilarious, really. I mean, at one point when they get married on eventually on the beach, on the beach weddings, mm-hmm. and his friends actually have this kind of, I don't know, guerrilla or underground mozzarella station beyond the far end of the beach where there's no lights. So they have this mozzarella di bufala station, and they're telling each other, you know, listen, there's this, you know, kind of aubergine pretending to be spaghetti thing, but, you know, just dump it, and there's the mozzarella di bufala. It's hilarious. So that's Ize Witch the Vegana. I should mention the Maltese translator is Ludwig Cazzopardi Ferrando. He did a brilliant job keeping the voice of the Italian author. Uh-huh. So that's one.
Okay.
But then on the other end, kind of this was, you know, light beach read, fun read. And there's a novel which was out recently, Castillo by Claire Cazzopardi. I think it's her best book yet, and there's lots of topical issues. So, for example, although parts of it are set in the 80s, there's this, it's set in Malta, mm-hmm. woman writer in the 80s who writes uncomfortable things, in this case fiction, and is blown up by a car bomb. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's these echoes, and there's you know, this bit is set in the 80s, but then it's also fast forward to present day. There's two aspects to it. There's the political aspect, mm-hmm. Where it's set in the 80s, where you have issues with, you know, with police, with issues of brutality, with car bombs, assassinations, etc. Then you've got present day, where you've got a woman, mother of a young child, who is looking for her own mother, who had just up and left and abandoned her when she was a child.
Was it in the 80s type of time?
Yes, exactly. In the 80s, she had just mm-hmm. left her with the dad and mm-hmm. just abandoned her, so her dad brought her up, and she decides she wants to look for her. She finds her, mm-hmm. And they start talking. She starts, you know, wants to get as much information about why, what happened, mom, why did you just up and leave me? And then after a couple of visits, the mom vanishes yet again. So kind of she just ups and leaves, and you know, she just suddenly doesn't find anyone, and the neighbors tell her no, the lady who lived there just moved. So it's not a light read by all means, but it's a very, very gripping read, because obviously you've got this story in the 80s, then obviously the writer who was blown up in the 80s is the sister of this mum who keeps leaving, and there are links, obviously, and in obviously this fiction, she was a crime writer, and again, for those of our listeners familiar with Maltese literature, there still aren't many female authors, but in the 80s especially, there weren't. There were hardly any female Maltese authors, so in this fiction, she was a female detective writer, who had this detective, who's called Castillo, hence mm-hmm. the name of the book, and she wrote these detective novels, which are hugely popular, and they would be read on the, you know, the radio, uh-huh. you know, serialized.
Yeah.
So, and it's a kind of snapshot of Malta, how it was in the 80s, how it is today, uh-huh. and how it's been in between, but also this very mother and daughter bond, and about, it's the opposite of the usual bond, where the mother and daughter bond is always made to be like something that can never break. Uh-huh. In this case, you've got a mother who has left not once but twice.
And unusually.
Unusually, exactly. Yeah. So it goes against the convention, especially in Malta, you know, the mother as the kind of family, the one who holds the family together. Uh-huh. While here, the mother just up and left, and it's the dad who has kept the family together. And this daughter is worrying and wants to find her mom, and also has her own daughter now, and is really, really obsessive about not wanting to do the same thing.
and not being able to understand.
Exactly. Anyway, those are two Maltese reads, and
yeah.
In a way they show how far, I think, in the different ways, how far Maltese literature, whether original or translation, uh-huh. has come in recent years.
But I like the sound of both of them, but was it Marriage of
the Vegan? Is it Witch Vegana? Yeah, yeah. No, that's a that's. I mean, for a beach read, it's brilliant because you know you will be reading, laughing.
You would be laughing out loud, yeah. And someone walking past might think you're laughing at them. So one has to be slightly careful.
Yes, that's
exactly. It's the book. It's the book.
Exactly.
Fact, it's not your trunks.
No, it's exactly. It's the book. It happened almost, not at the beach, because I came across the book. I was in mm-hmm. Italy on work, so I was alone, and I just went to a bookshop and bought it. You know how it is. You have these dinners at night, you just stop somewhere. Okay, I won't play the victim because it was Italy, so the food was good.
Good dinner.
But you have to pass the time. So I was reading, and I just couldn't stop laughing in the restaurant, and I just went back to the hotel and finished it that night because it was such a good, funny book.
No, I do like the sound of it, and I want to know who she is.
You'll have to Google her.
I'll have to Google it. Read the book. Google it.
Exactly.
Have you got some others?
Yes.
For us,
back to English. Another book. Everyone seems to have been talking about recently. It's broken records about being in the UK in the top, not 10, top 2, I think.
Okay.
It's Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine.
Okay.
It's a debut novel by a Scottish author. And she wrote this it's funny and it's tender at the same time. Some bits are even hard reading, but she brings them out in a light way. It's one of those books I really can't say much about without giving away the story.
Too much, okay.
But you've got this single woman living in Glasgow,
mm-hmm.
Who has really big problem. You know, she's the weird one in the office, if you know what I mean.
Oh,
and
yes.
You know, she's she's always the weird woman. She'll be abrupt with the guy who comes to fix her the IT guy comes mm-hmm. to fix her computer, and she will take things literally. And when she's given the task to organize the Christmas party, she goes for something really
random.
Which is like, okay, this is meant to be a fun night out for the office. But obviously, as the novel goes on, there are reasons that I can't give away mm-hmm. here on why she's like that. And you really, really, really feel for her.
Yeah.
And you really you want to hug her.
Oh, so it's like somebody you take with you through your life type of...
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's been doing really well. It's in the top... It's been alternating between the first and second position in the top 10 in the UK and the UK Sunday Times bestseller charts, all over the place. And it's been doing really well. And so... I do recommend it. Sometimes it gets a bit heart, wrenching.
Do you miss characters when you've finished a book?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah.
She is one.
You kind of want to check in on her and see
exactly.
if she's okay.
Exactly. She's okay. That's kind of thing.
Yeah.
So this is,
I'm such a mum, I tell you. I don't have children, but I sort of adopt people and animals from
off
books.
Your books.
Yeah. It's, and I almost think, they're not real. And because if you read on the sofa or you read in the bedroom or whatever, they're with me there.
Yes.
So it's really random when they're not there.
No, it's true. And
But
that's part of the nice thing, isn't it? Of reading, I find.
Yeah, meeting new people who don't answer back.
Exactly. Or who won't embarrass you on Facebook.
Exactly. I was just thinking, those are bad photos. But
exactly.
Your closest friends always look way better than you do. Yeah.
Exactly. So that hasn't happened.
They wouldn't do that to you.
They wouldn't come back to you. So,
any other
that's another one. I had mentioned that I don't read much non-fiction, but I did make one exception for this book. Called Prisoners of Geography. Again, I was taken in initially by the cover because I found it appealing. And I usually really don't read non-fiction, political stuff, especially geography sounds. But it's about the 10 chapters, I think they're 10, kind of maps of the world, different areas of the world. But it explains why each country's place in the world, in a way, and its concerns are a direct result of its geography or where it is.
That's fascinating.
And that's exactly what I found. So, for example, one chapter is the United States and why the United States is as it is and why we perceive it as, arrogant or as, whatever we perceive it as because of the way it is. Why, China, for example, and having what it entails, even if it's such a strong country, of having such a huge border, if you look at the border, and so why it gets so obsessive about, say, North Korea or about not wanting having America's influence on its doorstep. Uh-huh. And it is fascinating, even to someone like me who never reads this kind of political geography kind
but
of thing.
But it sort of just gives you like an anthropological view, exactly, I
yes.
suppose. Of,
and
of
it's written in layman's language. Okay. So I could really comfortably
fancy
read it. No, you don't need
politics,
you need to be an economist or a university, you know, academic or anything.
Fantastic. You like the sound. So that was called the
Prisoners of Geography.
Okay.
So
that sounds like a really one of those, you know, dinner party reads that then you can just
exactly
throw
and
out
can
conversation
say,
to make yourself sound yeah, horribly cultured.
Yeah, exactly. And someone mentions
that's
North Korea and what's happened.
Yeah,
you say, oh yeah, that's because blah 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 in the 50s.
So like, oh yes. Don't mind. Right, Prisoners of Geography, that's
exactly.
another one on my reading list.
So
I'm going to have to close it down here, I'm afraid. Doctor,
Book doctor, I quite like that.
From Merlin Publishers, thank you again for
joining me
and giving us some prescriptions for some great books to read this summer.
Thanks.
There's a few
advice
on that list for me, and you can listen to this program again through the website. So you can, or just email us and we'll give you the list of books. Thank you very much for listening to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers. Thank you for joining me, Monique Chambers, on this week's Beach Books and Beyond. I'd also like to thank Samuel Attard and Carmelo Breck for helping me to produce this programme. Join us again next week for Beach Books and Beyond, here on Campus FM.